Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for January 28th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to wrap up the Australian Open from Melbourne. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours as well as Health IQ. Let's introduce this week's co-host, Parsa. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, the late nights in Melbourne are over for another 12 months, Parsa. We can all get back to our normal sleeping patterns.
My favorite. I love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Parsa, awesome tournament. You know, this week we're going to, you know, get into the women's first, talk about Wozniacki's maiden slam. Finally, she wins a grand slam after all these years, being number one, all this ridicule. You know, when are you going to win it? What's going on? She finally does it. She can shut down all the naysayers. And then we have, you know, Our old buddy Roger Federer, once again, the fairy tale continues. He wins another Grand Slam for his 20th, you know, against Marin Cilic, who's, you know, had a really nice 12 months himself. Beats him in five sets earlier this morning, I guess late night coming into this morning. And then Fed's feeling good. Another great 2018, probably on tap for him. Then we're going to also talk about Nadal's recent injury, you know, Halep's disappointment in losing another major final, being number one. Now she's going to be down to number two. And, how, you know, and then looking forward as we move to March Madness in a month from now in Indian Wells and Miami. So, Parsa, without further ado, let's get into the women's draw. So we had Wozniacki beat Halep in three sets, a very good match. You know, Parsa, let it be said that the women's event, the women's side, I think really carried this fortnight. You know, there was way more compelling matches. And there's a reason for that, I think. And I'll share that with you in a second. But first of all, wanted to get your thoughts on that. Did you think the same? Or did you think that the men's draw provided more entertainment this time around?
Yeah, no. And I thought it was the same thing for the U.S. Open as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that's two Grand Slams in a row where the compelling matches and the drama and the comebacks and everything was on the women's side. You know, and it's been a very deep draw with the lack of top star power.
Yes.
There's really no one to mow through the draw, so you get a lot of just opportunity galore. And here you go, Sloane Stephens winning the U.S. Open, now Caro Wozniacki winning her first ever slam, and she's been around for a while. So
yes.
Talk about, you know, opportunity, and she took advantage of it.
Yeah, so we have one of our longtime listeners, Ahmed, who had emailed me earlier today, and he wanted to basically know because, you know, we've been kind of dogging on Wozniacki as well too. She's never going to win a slam, this and that, and she finally shuts us all up today, and she gets it done. Pardon me, yesterday. So, Parsa, this is my analysis, right? At the end of the day, you win an event. You're going down in history as a Grand Slam winner. Okay, that's for sure. My opinion stays the same. Yes, you can look at something and say, okay, when a lot of different winners come up, like maybe, you know, Joanna Konta wins the French Open. You know what I'm saying? Maybe Svitolina wins Wimbledon, right? And then maybe Halep wins the US Open. Then you're going to have four different slam winners and all of this stuff goes down. For me, yes, that's great in a way. If you're the type of fan or analyst that looks at things from the perspective of, I like variety, you know what I mean? But when you're looking at it from, like, do we have those perennial favorites every event that we know are going to go deep, that stories can be built on, that people can really get a big fan base behind, that's really not there right now. And the reason for that is obviously because Serena's been dominating for so long and she's been out of action now for a year, and this is why you see these things unfolding, right? So for me, that whole, like, for me, depth, yes, is there, but I don't think it's at a high enough level that you can say that it's from like a dominating perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like when we had the big four and big five in men's tennis, you know, they were pretty much racking it up. So you're saying, okay, these four or five guys are just better than everybody else. Okay. But, you know, we can see that now. Nadal and Federer were basically in this event. Djokovic went out early. Murray's not playing. Wawrinka was out early. And then Federer, at 36 and some change, is still winning Grand Slams. So, like, what's wrong with Zverev, right? What's wrong with, you know, Raonic and Nishikori? I mean, he didn't play. Dimitrov, once again, I told you that in my opinion, he can't do it. And he couldn't. And he went down to Edmund. That's a terrible loss, man. And no disrespect to Edmund. You know what I mean? So, you know, we'll get to the men in a minute. But for me, I really feel that, yes, the depth is there and it should be celebrated on the WTA tour. But it's not in a way from a dominating standpoint. And that, like, we still had the compelling matches. You know, we had the Davis and the Halep, and we had the finals, which was excellent. And, you know, credit to Wozniacki. I mean, she was basically playing with house money from the second round, where she was down 5-1 to Fett. She came all the way back to win it because she kind of said, listen, this girl can't close me out. She doesn't have what it takes right now. And she was right. And then from there, she rides it out and wins her first major, has beefed up her serve a little bit, you know, hitting her forehand a little bit bigger and moving, you know, fit and running, and you know, all credit to her. But still think it's important for a Serena type of figure to be there. Just somebody who you look at and you're in awe. You know what I mean? It's like, well, this is a super special player. I think, and lastly, Parsa, before you're going to jump in here, I think that another reason why we saw these type of matches is because of, you're going to see this with a counterpunching style of play on the women's side. Halep and Davis, both counterpunchers. Not a lot of power, and they can run forever. That's why you're seeing a 15-30 match. People are going to look at that and say, wow. You know what I mean? You get the finals. Again, Wozniacki, Halep, both counterpunchers. You know, it's not like you have, you know, Pliskova playing against Serena Williams. You know what I mean? You're just smashing the ball all over the place. You know, and that might not be as compelling. So that's another reason why. So I think on the women's side, I would like to hear your thoughts on that. Is it better for us to have more power players as an overall, a mix, or more, you know, counterpunching style of players? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think it's you try to find the perfect balance.
Yes.
And you look at Kerber, who
shout out to Kerber, man. Great tournament for her too.
Oh, she came back, but then, you know, when she, in her heyday or a couple years back, she was beating Serena Williams, who was at the top of her game.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe that was more meaningful. Like, you do take Kerber, I think, as a little bit more serious still than you would Wozniacki because of what that was. But regardless, you know, I don't know how much I liked it when it was the same three people winning everything in the men's tour. You know, there was definitely a second tier, and there was no parity in what was happening. You know, a lot of times in sports, you know, I think if you have 10 deep or whatever in tennis, I think it's a big benefit, men or women, just because it makes every match an unknown and you're not sure which way it's going to go. And so it's true that you may not be able to develop these larger fan bases, but you have more fan bases. And so I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I'm not sure, you know, that having a 36 and change, as much as I love Roger Federer, I love watching it. And he is definitely the best player in the tournament at the moment. He won the tournament.
Yes.
You know, but, you know, I'm not quite sure that we should be in an era where a 36 and a half year old is sort of dominating tennis right now.
Okay.
You know, and, you know, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how good that is for the sport. Can young kids relate to him? I don't know.
There's lots to be said,
but clearly he's great and strong. And in terms of the women, I mean, what can you say? It's anything can happen right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, we've said the last two tournaments have been better tournaments for the women's side, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to continue that way because you just don't know. I mean, Nima, who's going to win the French?
I have no idea. Right now, I would maybe say
Svitolina again. Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Halep. If she has to get it done, you got to think she's got to get it done. But that's my question for you. Is, you know, you just mentioned Fed. Is the same relatable to the women? Let's say Serena comes back at the French. She's coming back. I think she's playing Fed Cup, right? So then she looks like she's going to do Indian Wells, Miami, and she's going to keep, you know, play the clay. And I think she'll keep it to under 10 tournaments this year anyways, but that's just a speculation. That's not a fact or anything. But if she starts dominating, is that good for tennis? See, that's the thing. Like, Parsa, if I gave you a scenario right now, right, where we opened up that crystal ball where sometimes we are right. I mean, we took a lot of L's this tournament, right? And we can admit that because we're big boys. Right? We took a lot of losses here with our picks. But if we looked forward, and I told you, Parsa, French Open, Wimbledon, U.S. Open, next year, all four slams. Going into 2020, you're going to have 8 to 10 new winners on both the men's and women's side. Would you sign up for that now? Or do you like to see something build? Do you know what I mean? Some dominance build. That's the thing. Like, there's always that balance, right? Like, I know we want to see rivalries. We want to see competitive tennis. There's no question about that. But when you have a scenario where every tournament somebody new is winning, yes, in that tournament it can be compelling. But how many, you know, seats is Federer filling in stadiums? I can tell you he's filling a lot. How many seats is Sharapova or Serena going to fill? A lot. There's no question about it. Is Chung or Lauren Davis or, you know, even Svitolina going to do that? Probably not right now. They're going to have to do a lot to get to that level, right? So they have to do it. And that's why it's good for the sport that we have these iconic players that are able to transcend sports. And the only way that that's achievable is for them to get on a run like Djokovic did, like Nadal did, like Serena did, like Henin did, like, you know, like Steffi Graf. Otherwise, it's not possible, right? Because if you consistently have one-hit wonders and all of these one-slam winners or, you know, one-offs, then you can't build momentum in storylines. That specific tournament maybe looks good, but then it's forgotten. And then as an overall, I don't think it's that great for the sport. So that's my opinion. That's how I look at things. I'd like to, you know, if you want to expand on that, you certainly can.
I mean, I sort of agree with you. And at the same time, I don't agree in that, you know, I look at the NFL and you see the parity in the NFL, you know, with the salary cap and, you're getting different teams. Now there's one dominant team because they're doing it better than everyone in the Patriots, but they still aren't winning every single time, yet they're a dynasty. And I think that you can have that in tennis as well. I think you can have different cast of characters, let's say Cilic, then Nadal, then Wawrinka, then Djokovic, all coming at Federer, and then Federer can rise to the top. I think that makes Federer even greater.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's right now at 36.5 and he's really doesn't have that much dangerous competition in best of five sets, you know, what's the – is he being truly great or is it because of a weak era, you know? And that's where, you know, you have to sort of figure out how it works out and how the math works out. And in my opinion, only my opinion, obviously, it's, you know – a great story, but the men's matches have been lacking a little bit for me, and there's no one really to challenge him on that level.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping Nadal would be healthy, and I think it would have been a Fedal final like I predicted, but it didn't happen that way. You know, the health got in the way. So, you know, I think it's probably personal preference if I had to guess, but I prefer parity.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just to come back to what you said, a major factor is you're talking about team sports where there's a lot of different characters and they're representing like a city. You know what I mean? So you go to Atlanta, you got the Falcons, or you go to Cleveland, you got the Cavaliers, you come to Toronto, you got the Raptors or whatever. And you have a team. So you have a city. You have, you know, people wearing their jerseys. They're coming there to support that team. That can switch up. There's mid-season trades, all of that. Federer all of a sudden is not going to play for, you know, for Canada. He's not all of a sudden going to play for Spain. So he's all, you know what I'm saying? And so he's obviously he's got a worldwide fan base, but he's also, you know, done so much that he's transcended sports and he's become this whole brand, this RF brand, right? if you always have one-offs, that also proves that they don't have that much talent or sustainability, frankly, to dominate, right? Like right now, if you have Halep and Wozniacki, frankly, two counterpunchers at the top of the women's sport, they're not going to be able to dominate because they just don't have the weapons. We're living in, you know, like that's the reality of the situation. So unless, you know, one of these players is going to come around, like maybe if Madison Keys can finally get it together, she's going to be able to blow them both off of the court. But again, she's got a lot of work to do herself, right? So I think when you look at this on the women's side, it's going to be a very interesting time this year, especially how Serena comes back. But I'll say this. If Serena is at top form, and Wozniacki and Halep can defeat her, I wouldn't mind watching that. I have absolutely nothing against Serena. She's amazing. I have a lot of admiration for her. But that would be, for me, exciting because you're seeing the greatest maybe player of all time, men's and women's, certainly women's, play, and somebody's able to take her out, even though she's 36 and some change, and she just had her first baby. You know, and she's got a lot of things, obviously, on the side now that are more, maybe more important to her than tennis matches. But still, she's still that great, and that would be like potentially an interesting dynamic. But again, what we shall wait and see. I think on the women's side, it's going to be, again, a lot of merry-go-round type of tennis this year. You're going to see maybe five or six different players occupy that top spot, and you know, we'll see how it breaks down. You got any final thoughts on the women's before we move on?
You know, not much other than you know, I you know, it sort of did play out as I thought it would. I think it is the era of the counterpuncher, and I think it's going to remain this way. You know, it's either going to be someone who's hot, like Ostapenko was last year, or someone who's consistent in playing the patterns. You know, it's kind of like where men's tennis was a decade ago. Mm-hmm. That's what started dominating, is guys who keep lots of balls in the court, and when it comes to big points, they just refuse to make mistakes. You know, and so I think it does, in some ways, come out to be good tennis, you know, in a shortened format, in the best of three set, and with the emotions and the runs that the women go through, I think it was just more compelling and more entertaining.
Okay. All right, Parsa. So moving along to the second half of our podcast for the Men's Review, which is brought to you this week by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including tennis players, runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. From a tennis perspective, according to a 2007 study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, tennis players who play twice a week have 17% lower body fat than the aged match controls. According to a 1980 study in the Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, average VO2 max is 40% higher for male tennis players and 32% higher for females. As you can clearly see, there's a lot of health benefits to playing tennis on a regular basis. From a savings standpoint, 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/TC, which stands for Tennis Connected, or mention the promo code TC when you talk to a Health IQ agent at the following 1-800-549-1664 number. Okay, Parsa, so now as we break down the men's final today and the men's tournament overall, you know, RF, as I put a hashtag, you know, goat life, this guy is just, you know, running things and he keeps getting those W's and it's amazing. I mean, he basically didn't win a Grand Slam for 5 years, from the 2012 Wimbledon to the 2017 Australian Open, and now he's won three in the last 2 years and counting. You got to put him right now as the favorite for Wimbledon. No questions about it. And I would say definitely top 2 to 3 minimum favorites to win the U.S. Open, without a shadow of a doubt. So what's going on here, Parsa? I mean, this is another thing we got to talk about. I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, where's your admiration for Federer? We all know that we have that. I mean, this guy's a genius on the court. But does Murat Safin have a point? You know, he came out a couple weeks ago and said, listen, if these guys like Nadal and Federer are winning, now Federer and Nadal have won the last 5 Grand Slams, okay? Is there something wrong with Zverev, Dimitrov, You know, even Shapovalov, like, he's a little bit young still, even like a Rublev, or, you know, Nishikori's been injured. But these, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, why do these guys just keep winning, and why can't the rest of these guys step up and get it done? Do you think it's a mental thing? Do you think their games are not good enough? I don't think it's fitness for the most part. I mean, yes, if some of them have been injured, that's definitely a point. But a guy like Dimitrov wasn't injured in this tournament. But he came back. You know, Parsa, did you see Dimitrov's post-match interview?
I didn't. After,
okay, it's great that you didn't see it, because it was exactly like that one that I attended when he lost in the U.S. Open a couple of years back to Murray, the one that you were really pissed off about because you were there and you had spent, you know, you had bought some expensive tickets. And he said the same thing. He goes, "I just mentally got tired." And I was like, "What are you talking about? You're number three in the world, man. What are you tired about? You know, like, how is this guy, 25, 26? Peak physical condition, you know what I'm saying? What are you tired about? Like, it's the beginning of the year, you're just in the Maldives relaxing. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
What's going, and that's the thing. Like, I think for me, Dimitrov, his serve is always going to be an issue, especially over five sets. He's never going to be able to, you know, like a Nick Kyrgios, even though he beat Kyrgios, that was an amazing match. I'm still shocked that he won that match. But, and I think if Kyrgios had won that match, he might have made the finals, because I think he would have beaten Nadal or Stilich. He would have for sure beat Edmund, and then against Federer, you never know. I still would favor Federer, but he would definitely would have had a chance there. But anyways, that's all, you know, ifs, ands, or buts. I definitely think for me, I would be shocked if Dimitrov ever wins a Grand Slam. That's my personal opinion. And then just overall, like, what do you think is going on here?
Yeah, you know, you're asking me to comment on Dimitrov of all people. You know, I mean, right there, that's enough. I mean, if there's one guy that I resent is because of that night at the U.S. Open. It was a big match, night session, and he just was quote unquote tired. And you know, when I'm tired, I continue to plod along and do the best I can. When he's tired, he sort of checks out. And I, you know, there's not much to be said with that other than. You know, I've heard from people that they thought he had a chance to win the tournament, but he really wasn't playing that well the whole time.
No.
He's a great athlete.
100%.
You know, a great defender, but 100%. You know, he doesn't have the sting that Federer does on his shots. And so
not even close.
Not those guys. So, no. You know, I think when he reaches that limit, he just kind of goes away because he knows that he can't do any more.
Sure.
I don't know.
For sure. And he's not a number three player. I mean, he got lucky at the end of last year. We got to be honest, man. Like, I don't hate the guy, but, and he's an amazing athlete. You know, he's a good looking guy. He's got all of this stuff going on the side for him, and you know, he's going to have an awesome life and a great, good career. He's already had that. But like, I think this is the max for him. Like, he'll keep pushing forward. They're going to work hard with Valvedu and do all of their stuff. I'm telling you right now, I would be shocked if this guy ever wins a Grand Slam. Like, he's going to have to really come in. You know, Fed's going to have to retire. Nadal's, you know, not going to be there. Djokovic, like, it's the sea really has to part for him to really make some noise. And that's my opinion. Then you got a guy like Zverev, who I haven't been able to figure out what's going on with him yet. Is it a fitness issue for him? Is it he wilts under five sets? What's the make on him? What do you think is his issue?
Who was that again?
Alex Zverev.
Oh, Zverev.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a slump going on. I think the world knows him, and I think that there's the book is out on him, and now he's having to face his weaknesses and getting punished into the corners. Guys are just constantly moving him and not letting him get set and hit,
mm-hmm.
and it's just getting overly physical. And over five sets in a Grand Slam, I still just don't think that he's physical enough. He reminds me a lot of Kristaps Porzingis on the New York Knicks, my favorite team, in the basketball and NBA. It's like, you know, he's a great talent, but he's not fit enough to actually last through an NBA season. And he gets tired legs and makes mistakes. And I think the same thing happens with Zverev. I think he gets tired and then his mind starts to give out and he starts to do amateurish type things. And they don't lead to success over a long percentage, which is what winning Grand Slam is all about.
Yeah, for sure. I still think at this point, I think Zverev is going to have a bit of a letdown this year because he had such a huge 17. know, winning a couple Masters 1000s. He still has a lot of room to do some damage. I think Jack Sock is going to take a dip. He's definitely not working hard. Looks like he's gained some weight. He's another top 10 guy currently. I think Kyrgios, if he can stay healthy, I definitely think he's moving in the right direction right now, even though he lost to Dimitrov, which, again, I'm still shocked about because Dimitrov did play really well there. But if you look at that match as a whole, you know, Nick needed to win a couple of those breakers, man. I mean, he just lost every breaker, which with a guy with his serving potential, he's got to be disappointed in that. I know he's gearing up for Davis Cup. But it's going to be interesting for me. I mean, where, you know, let's talk about Fed here for a second. I mean, how good is Roger Federer feeling? How good is it to be Roger Federer? I mean, you're in a situation where, like, you love tennis so much. You're this multi-millionaire with hundreds of millions of dollars. You're still crying after winning events. And this is why he's such an endearing character to all of us, because he still cares so much. You know what I mean? He just exudes tennis. And he still wants to play. And, you know, he looks like he's not slowing. This guy can play till he's 40. I mean, why not, right? Like, who's going to stop him at this point? I mean, he's playing 19 now because he just won another Grand Slam, right? So how bad, even if the rest of the year he does nothing, he's still the defending champion of the Australian Open, right? So I would like to think that he's coming, unless barring some sort of injury, he's coming back. But I'd like to get your, you know, we talked about something before we got on air, Parsa, where was the Fed that you saw in the 2018 Australian Open reminiscent of the 2017 Roger Federer, where he came out, you know, that Burdick match, the Nishikori, the Wawrinka, and then the Nadal match, where he was just smashing backhands, playing really aggressive type of tennis? You didn't see that as much this tournament, if I'm correct, right? You saw a lot more slicing, more of that kind of flat slice where it's really deep and the angles and the drop shots, a little bit more creative, still serving well. He looked fit and hitting his forehand, obviously. He's always hitting that one well. What was the dynamic difference that you saw between 17 and 18 for him? And why do you think we saw that difference?
Did you find a difference?
I did, yeah. I thought he wasn't hitting his backhand as big. I thought he wasn't hitting...
Oh, yeah, like not as good. I thought he was better last year than he was this year.
Yes. So, and I think that also... Yeah, I just thought he was playing more aggressive, like more with a sense of urgency last year. Now, it needs to be said, he was obviously even fresher last year because he was off for 6 months, right? Not that he was fresh because he won this tournament. He only lost two sets, and that was in his last match. But I thought he was hitting bigger. He had more of a sense of urgency last year. You know what I mean? Like, I got to hit a winner now. Was that a fitness issue? Was he kind of like, I'm good to play five sets as many times as I need to here because my legs are ready to go? You know what I'm saying? Like,
you know, or it's what we were talking about earlier. You know, there's really no parity. There's really no challenge. And he's blowing through the draw in straight sets all the way to the final.
Yes.
And maybe he just doesn't need to go to that gear. You know, simple as that.
And he didn't have as hard of a draw as he had last year. I mean, look at last year. He had Burdick, Nishikori, Wawrinka, and Nadal. Right? This year he had Burdick, who I thought would give him a much tougher match. I mean, he destroyed Del Potro the round before, and then he went down. Even though he was serving for that first set, he went down meekly after that, you know, brain cramp. And then Chung retired after an hour. That's a semifinal, so that was a bird mat. That was like a cakewalk and a half. And then he played Cilic, destroyed him in the first set, and then Cilic came back in the second. Fed was up 2-1. Cilic wins that fourth, and then Fed runs out to a 3-0 lead in the fifth, and then he, you know, he takes over and he wins 6-1. So, all in all, I'm sure he's very happy with that. Looks like I think he initially wasn't on the entry list for Dubai, but looks like he's going to be playing that. My opinion, it's a mistake. I think it suits him. He's got a house there. I think it's comfortable and easy. I think you got to play the same schedule as last year. I mean, why fix something that isn't broken, right? Don't play the clay season. You're not going to win the French. I know people are going to, you know, hit me up on Twitter. What are you talking about? But he's not going to win the French Open. He's not going to be Dominic Thiem. He's not going to be Nadal on clay. And that's it. Get ready for Wimbledon. Play those two events. You can probably win one of the two warm-ups. And then you're by far the favorite to win on grass. Because Nadal's not going to do it. Djokovic, maybe, if he's 100%. Murray's going to be coming back, maybe. You know, Stan, worst surface is grass. who, and then maybe Kyrgios if he's ready to go. So you look like right now he's the favorite, and we're in January. You know what I'm saying? So I think that, you know, I'd like to hear what you think about that as well too. Like, what do you think he needs to do for the rest of the season, and how are the rest of the cast of characters going to be able to, you know, get in his way potentially and get in the mix?
I think, believe it or not, Indian Wells, Miami going back to back, I think it's got is a big undertaking.
For sure. And I don't think he'll win both of those.
What was that?
I don't think he'll win both of those events.
Yeah, and who knows what kind of spin, you know, he could lose first round of any tournament he plays because he sometimes doesn't play any warm-up events or any matches beforehand. So it'll be, you know, important that he does some sort of strong results there. You know, but the way he's playing right now, there's really no one that can touch him because no one can really defend him yet and put the pressure that's necessary. Yeah, someone can beat him, you know, six in the third or something like that, and I wouldn't have a problem with that. But, I don't see him coming down in level. I think everyone's got to catch up.
I think so, too. And, Parsa, I just want to make a quick note on Cilic because, I mean, this guy has now made the finals of Wimbledon. He's up to number three in the world and Australian Open finalists as well, too. And remember last year I told you that I'm really feeling Cilic. You know, Ivanišević had fixed up his serve, and he's just in a good place. He's in a good headspace, and he's playing amazing tennis, man. I mean, he's feeling confident, and he's got a very – I think he's just got to get to that next gear of really believing in himself and not taking no for an answer. Like, I'm going to win every single match that I play. Even if I lose – I'm going to win it. You know what I'm saying? That kind of mentality. And I think if he does that, because I like what he said in his post-match press conference. I don't know if you caught that one, but they asked him, like, what are your goals for this year? And he goes, well, I wanted to at least win one slam, at least win one slam, and be number one in the world. So that's what he's going for. You know what I mean? So and why not, right? Because you have Federer who, like we said, right, he's got a lot of points to defend, man. It's not a joke. Okay? Like, he's got to defend Indian Wells. He's got to defend Miami. He's got to defend Halle. He's got to defend Wimbledon. His finals of Toronto, quarters of U.S. Open. Then he won the Shanghai Masters, like semis of World Tour Finals. There's a lot of deep runs that he made. And, you know, the rest of these guys are not in that position, right? So I think that, you know, a guy like Cilic, yes, he's got points to defend. He made Wimbledon Finals, but watch out for him because he's one of those under-the-radar guys, not a lot of fanfare, very quiet, but he just goes out there and he hits big and he's in a good place and he's number three in the world. We don't know what kind of condition Rafa's in. Looks like he's coming back for Acapulco later in February, but we shall see. You know what I mean? And that was a major bummer for Rafa, must also be said, because I definitely think it would have been amazing if we had another Fidel final. But it wasn't meant to be. And what do you think Nadal needs to do? I mean, he's complaining about how we're playing a lot of hardcore tournaments, right? And he's right, because basically after Wimbledon, you have, you know, from where, you know, the U.S. Open Series starts, you go until Miami, right? With hardcores. It's like 8 months of hardcore tennis. That's a lot of tennis, you know what I mean? Then you got 6 weeks on the clay, 2 or 3 weeks on the grass, and then you're back on hard again. So That's a different story because we got to talk about that maybe on another show. Are there too many hardcore events? But do you think that Nadal right now should put that much of a premium on playing Acapulco, playing Indian Wells and Miami, and then getting ready for the clay? Or maybe just play Miami and then get ready for the clay? What would you suggest in that scenario?
I mean, it's totally dependent on where the health of his body is, but he should be looking at Federer and how he plans his schedule very carefully and almost copying it for his own body, for his own game.
Yes.
And it would make more sense for him to play more clay events and maybe cut out a few hardcore events. But at the same time, I think Nadal is a serious competitor and the world's best, maybe, athlete, one-on-one competitor like that. And he wants to go after where the best people are, you know, so I'm not sure he's interested in going to smaller events and playing clay court events. So I think, you know, he has a valid point. At the same time, the guys that are at the top, you know, it's just easier to lay down a hard court logistically. Everything's, I think, just a little bit easier. And That's pretty much it, Nima. I mean, it's a pretty even surface. You know, there's sliding now on hard courts, and you can get the fast servers who are hot, and you can get the guys who don't miss can also do very well. So, you know, I think Nadal really should just play very, very carefully and give himself ample time to rest. Not that that would have made a difference for Australia, because it seemed like maybe he took an awkward step or something and tweaked his hip there, but you know, this is his thing. You know, he's broken down before.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said before, this is his thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So our final 2 points now. We got to get to Djokovic, and then one last question I have for you. So we look at Novak. Great to see him back in Australia. Played 4 rounds. Chung took him out in straights. Visibly, you know, injured. Had some hip issues. I think that was more because just the rigors of playing an actual, you know, best of 5-set tennis was foreign to him because he hadn't played for a while. So he kind of, you know, you're going to get a little bit sore. Elbow, you know, I was hearing some rumors that maybe surgery is on the table. Well, if that's the case, then he's going to be derailed for quite a while. And that would be terrible at this point. So then he's going to be almost out of action for a year minus one tournament that he played in Australia. So we'll see how that goes. What is your thoughts on Djokovic overall? And do you think that he's going to rebound and have a strong, you know, 18? Or does he have a really long road ahead, in your opinion? What do you think?
I mean, it just depends on his health, Nima. It's hard to answer. Okay. I thought he was going to come back and dominate because I still think he's in his peak of his career. You know, but if he can't get out on the court, then there is no career. So hopefully he gets healthy and he can figure out what's going wrong with his elbow so that he can go out there and compete. And I think if that did happen, that he would be the guy to beat. But you know, until we know more, it's very hard to speculate.
Okay, and then finally, if you can tell me one player that you're looking to as we come back, you know, we're gonna hit everybody back up in around early March. We're gonna take about a month off here. What do you foresee as your player that we're gonna talk about when we come back in about 5 weeks, who really played well in February and who's gonna have a strong you know, Indian Wells in Miami? And no, I'm not talking about the Feds and the Nadals and stuff like that, like another player. And it doesn't need to be out of top 20 guy. Just generally, who do you think is going to be impressing us up until we get to, you know, March Madness in Cali and Miami? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that probably the guy that I have my eye on still is Nick Kyrgios.
Yes.
You know, I did see good things from him at the Australian Open.
For sure.
But he still isn't doing enough to cross the finish line. And hopefully he saw that. And if he saw that, then I think he's continuing to build his consistency. You know, and now that he's going year after year, he's consistently having certain results. And so now you can get the needle moving for a guy who's historically very erratic and can kind of give up whenever he feels like it. I think we're past those times. And so I think the graph is going to keep moving higher and higher until he threatens for a Grand Slam.
Okay. And Parsa, I mean, you took the words. I'm right there with you. You know, a lot of people know that I've been following Nick now for a few years, been disappointed with him in the last few months, saw a little bit of a resurrection with his win in Brisbane, played pretty solid. So, I mean, what, he's coming in, what, 8-1 now on the year so far? Not too bad. And that he's going to get pumped up for Davis Cup. I think he's going to have a good performance there. Then he's probably going to play either Dubai or Acapulco and then get ready for Miami, Indian Wells. So I think he's going to have some decent results because he usually plays really well in those two events too. Made the semis in Miami the last couple of years. Yeah, he was supposed to play Federer in Indian Wells, but he got food poisoning, so he was out of that. So I think I'm right there with you. And he's good for the game. He's another one of those guys who, if he plays his cards right, can really captivate, you know, a global audience. He's got the look, he's got the game, he's got the persona, and he's got the charisma to be able to achieve that. So anyways, with that said, Parsa, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody out there for listening. Parsa and I will be back in about 5 weeks' time to preview the BNP Paribas Open from Indian Wells, California, as well as, you know, then get ready for Miami. And then, you know, that's the meat and potatoes of the year for us. I've said this year in, year out. Then we're going pretty much, you know, hardcore up until the end of the U.S. Open. In the meantime, if you want to hear some tennis and other things from Parsa, make sure to hit him up at Parsa Samuel on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes as well as listen to it on our on our Tennis Connected website. Big shout out also to Grand Slam Tennis Tours, who does an amazing job throughout the Grand Slam calendar. Anybody looking to get down to the French Open, Wimbledon, or US Open, make sure to hit them up. And subsequently, if you want to get down to Indian Wells, Miami, Monte Carlo, the Masters 1000 events, check out their sister company at Top Notch Tennis Tours. And finally, a big shout out to Health IQ. You heard the spiel on them, so anybody wants to come up, make sure you hit them up. Health IQ. Thanks again. Be good. Enjoy the month of February. Everybody stay warm where it's cold, and we'll talk to you guys soon.